Daily Bugle Classified Department.
I'd like to place an ad, please. Help not wanted.
Not wanted?
That's right. Help not wanted. Glass blowers, tinkers, corset boners, cheroot rollers, lamp lighters, calliope players. Got that?
Yes. Anything else?
One thing more. Put a headline on it.
A headline?
Yeah. Make it read, All Vanishing Americans Aren't Indians.
This is the story. The United States Armed Forces Radio Service holds up its radio mirror for what may be a last reflection of a few of the jobs that are fast passing from the American scene in a drama document entitled Vanishing American.
Americans spend their working days in about 29,000 different occupations.
So says the statistician, but put him on the witness stand.
Will Mr. Statistician take the stand, please? Mr. Statistician?
And our fact-finding friend isn't so sure of himself.
Mr. Statistician, isn't it quite possible, indeed likely, that in your job compilation you missed a job here and there, huh?
Well,
answer the question, please.
Well, there are, quite a few jobs that are passing out of existence.
I see. In other words, in your figure of 29,000 occupations, you may have slipped up on a few jobs Americans are still holding today.
Well, yes, but, only because, statistically, they just aren't there anymore. Statistically, they're vanishing Americans.
Thank you, Mr. Statistician.
So, America, let us this summer day look through the wide end of our national telescope at some of our vanishing Americans. Remember, we're not seeking to make predictions. We wish merely to aim our microphone at a few Americans before it may be too late to hear the sound of their labors. The first sound we bring you... the steam calliope. How many of you Americans recall the days when you trailed the steam calliope down Main Street at the end of a circus parade? Well, it wasn't so very long ago when important men were hard put to find not only a calliope, but a man who could play it. Listen.
The scene, Washington, D.C., headquarters for the presidential inaugural parade.
Well?
I'm sorry, Chief, we've hunted everywhere. I don't think there's a steam calliope or a steam calliope player living anywhere in the United States.
Oh, but it would be such a wonderful touch. Think of it. A steam calliope playing the Missouri Waltz.
Air calliopes, yes. Steam calliopes, no.
Well, keep on looking. There must be somebody left who can play a steam calliope.
But remember, Chief, even if we find the calliope and the calliope player, we still got to find somebody who knows how to fire a calliope. Keep up the steam in the boiler. And then...
Yeah?
Most calliopes are drawn by a team of horses. Maybe six, maybe eight. That means we'll need somebody to drive those horses. A long lines driver. And they went out of existence when we stopped hauling borax out of Death Valley.
Well, just keep looking. Miss Blue, get me the White
they
House.
They kept looking. And one day, not long after.
Mr. Chief, we've done it.
Done what?
Found a steam calliope artist, a fireman to keep up the steam, and a long lines driver.
Well done, Jones. Well done.
So, on January 20th, 1949, as the hours-long inaugural parade wound its way up Pennsylvania Avenue between the cheering crowds, millions of people waited in the January cold and descending darkness for the tail end of the parade so they could see and hear the steam calliope. And operating it was an artist of a profession destined soon to be as extinct as the passenger pigeon. An artist who knew the mysteries of watching a gauge to see how steam pressures were being kept up in the boiler. An artist at the same time paying close attention to the musical chords he played so as to preserve that steam and not be left with a hiss instead of a hoot. An artist, perhaps the last of his kind, making wondrous steam-filled music. And while we're on the subject, you may not know it, but here is a sound which goes with another breed of vanishing American.
On a Sunday afternoon.
Remember family nights, party nights, summer nights around the player piano in the front room. Ah, sweet remembrance of things past. And if any splitting was on the agenda, it wasn't the atom, but a lemonade. Those were the days when every person with a foot he could pump with was his own piano player. thanks to the talented man behind the spinning paper roll, of whom a very few, like this gentleman, are still left.
I am a piano roll cutter.
Yes. Tell us, if you will, sir, just exactly what it is you contribute to making, literally, the music go round and round.
Well, I'm responsible for making the master roll from which the other piano rolls are mechanically copied.
And just what skills are involved in this artistry of yours?
One must be an expert arranger and an expert musician at the same time. In addition, a piano roll cutter like myself must be an expert in pneumatics.
Good heavens.
Well, you see, the whole process is related to a knowledge of air. When you pump a player piano, in playing, you really pump out air. The music is formed by breaking the vacuum that's been created by the hammer striking the roll.
And all those perforations on the music roll?
We cut those on the master roll by hand. The length of the perforation stands for the length of the note.
Tell me, are there many of you still working at the task of piano roll cutting?
No, not anymore. 20 years ago, that was a different story. But today, those of us still working are over 50 years old. Carryovers from the period when everyone had a player piano. And we're almost all of us in New York. Outside of New York, you can scarcely find a one anymore.
And no young men coming up to learn your skill, to cut the rolls when you're gone?
The young men today are going to work in the regular piano factories where they specialize in only one thing.
Well, thank you, sir, for letting us, as far as piano roll cutters go, read the perforations in the wall and helping us to recall for a fleeting moment the good old piano player days. Listen now to the earmark of still another vanishing American. You're listening to the incomparable tones of a Stradivarius violin, played by David Saucer of the NBC Symphony Orchestra. This Stradivarius is one of those instruments made by the famous master of Cremona in Italy in the 17th century. Today, these violins are precious, in dollar value alone worth from $15,000 to $100,000, depending upon tone, period, condition, and history. In this modern age, there are none who can match the patient genius of violin maker Stradivari himself. But more pertinent is the fact that not only violin making, but violin repairing is truly a vanishing skill on the American horizon. In one of our larger cities, there is a craftsman who, in spite of our present-day tempo, persists in walking in the leisurely steps of the great masters to bring to his work the careful skill of ancient craftsmanship. He is Simone Sacconi, and here's how he told us about it.
More than 300 Stradivari have been brought to my shop for repairs. Each one I treat like never before there is another one like it. I try to use the same materials and methods of the old violin makers, Niccolo Amati, Guarneri del Gesu, Enrico Cerruti, and the great Antonio Stradivari himself.
How long does it take to become a first-rate violin maker?
I began when I was 8 years old in Italy. It takes a lifetime.
Mm. What do you need to learn in that lifetime?
First, to be a good chemist so you can make your own glue and varnish. We make our glue from white kid leather like the masters use. We don't sandpaper because old Antonio, he don't have sandpaper. We smooth the wood by rubbing with asprella, a herb with a rough bark.
So you have to be a chemist to begin with. What else?
A musician to tell the quality of the tone.
Check.
And then, a physicist to judge the vibrations and resonance.
Yes.
And naturally, a woodworker, a carver, and a painter so you can match the colors.
Naturally.
Me, I use in my shop only old spruce and maple from the Adriatic. Pieces of wood from Venice, Naples, Genoa, and Cremona. From old churches and houses built over 300 years ago.
It is such painstaking craftsmanship as this, America. Craftsmanship fast disappearing, to which we largely owe the fact that today we can still hear, much as when they first left their master's hand centuries ago, the incomparable music of Stradivari. From Stradivari to striptease is quite a step. But if we would be good reporters, we're forced to walk the runway. For once the facts are reduced to their bare essentials, revealed for all to see is...
The naked truth, brother, is the striptease are fading out.
So wailed a nightclub reporter along New York's rhythmic 52nd Street. Suppose we let him explain.
We're running clean out of new names and new faces. It all began when our burlesque houses were shut down some time ago. There just isn't a decent place to train peelers anymore. We can't feature the same torsos and, I mean, talent. Oh, I tell you, every time I hear that old familiar music, then I think what's going to happen to Broadway without strippers. Genuine tears come into my eyes.
So, if you can take it from 52nd Street, the fate of our divesting divas is virtually hanging by a G-string. Let's be serious. Yes, serious for just a moment. About the 29,000 occupations listed so solemnly by the statistician and how they came about. At first, in the early colonial days, every family was a manufacturing and producing unit, each home a workshop. Father and the lads felled the trees for houses, cleared the land for planting, served as their own blacksmith, wheelwright, carpenter, and saddler. Mother and the girls dipped candles, spun the thread on their own spinning wheels. But in time, as life grew more complex, it became more convenient to have someone else do it. When Ma said...
Pa, the children have been eating new clothes.
I'll have the weaver make us up a bowl of cloth.
Yes, and tinkers mended pots, kettles, and dippers. Cabinet makers made sturdy furniture. As towns and cities grew, so did the demand for these skilled workers, who took a fierce pride in their workmanship.
There, it's finished. If you can find a better set of andirons in the whole state, I'd like to see them.
Then came the 1800s and the Industrial Revolution. That kind of craftsmanship disappeared. From hand power, Americans took to steam and water power. Factories began to dot the valley.
There, Mr. Brown, there are the plans from England. I brought them here in my head.
The plans for the first American factory. The speaker was Samuel Slater, father of the American factory system, who had escaped the English authorities, embarked for America secretly, and without models or drawings of any kind, set up the first textile mill in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Soon, fewer people were engaged in the physical production of goods, and economists were matching our new economic base with a new descriptive word, technological. Take a young man in, say, 1870, trying to decide between...
Shall I be a cooper or a barber?
A cooper, in case you've forgotten, is or was a barrel maker. Skilled trade with a long historical tradition behind it. Thinking it over, our young man may have decided...
Well, there are twice as many coopers as barbers, but... Well, men need barrels more than they do haircuts.
So, the young man decides to be a cooper. But what happens? Within the span of his life, employment opportunities for coopers shrink to one-fifth of their previous number. Why? Because wooden barrels come to be produced by factory methods. And what about the need for barbers? 10 heads sprout today where only one grew before. And nobody has yet discovered how to give a technological haircut. Throughout the Western world then, but more rapidly and extensively in our own country than anywhere else, technological changes have come, are still coming, to alter the occupation and character of the people.
A pretzel manufacturer.
Yes?
Only a little while ago, we met in Philadelphia to worry about the twister shortage.
Twister shortage?
Jawohl. You see, the schools are placing more and more attention on mechanical training. But more than a third, 36% of our pretzel output is twisted by hand.
So?
Well, what are we going to do for hand-twisted pretzels when the old-time pretzel twisters are dying off?
Yes, to the pretzel industry, too, time has thrown a curve. But to continue. Recall ye when men went down to the sea in tall ships, and from the crow's nest in the topmost mast rang the spine-tingling cry.
There she blows!
Well, they tell us, they who are left of the whalers.
Well, you see, other commercial products are being substituted for the whale oil they used to burn in lamps, and whale bone they use for corsets, you see. From a catch of 68,000 tons long about the late 1800s, we've dropped to a catch of less than 7,000 tons. Maybe we ought to fish for something else. Can't you just hear the lookout?
Sardine ho!
The whaling industry harpooned by time, to say nothing of the steadily decreasing supply of whales. Also on our slowly disappearing list...
Fares, please, all fares.
Where'd I get off of Spruce Street, please?
At Main and Bleecker. I'll call it, madam, don't worry. Step to the back of the car.
The trolley car conductor. As long ago as 1936, that's 13 years ago, Fortune magazine reported...
430 cities, ranging in population from 10 to 25,000 people, have completely abolished trolleys. Over 43% of all U.S. cities having transportation facilities are all bus cities.
Can you identify this sound? It's the music from the hammer of a shingler at work. Shinglers who'd mellow a house with wood shingles instead of paint and draw from their imagination a tapestry of patterns. Today,
roofers are taking over. The fact is, certain types of roofing and siding are made nowadays that even the house owner himself can put on without ever having done it before. Nuts.
In 1870, there were almost 30,000 workers in wagon and carriage factories. The street sounds then went something like this. But living 1949.
Well, there are around about 2,000 of us still at it, spite of the automobile. Gone are the draymen, teamsters, liverymen, most of the hostlers and drivers.
Now there are the garage and the mechanic, eh?
Right, but we few are still hanging on.
Don't tell me there's still a demand for your product.
Yep, we're still making racing jigs and apparatus for farm hauling, but what'll happen tomorrow? Well, who knows? We might have had a chance if the consarned airplane didn't show up.
Remember,
under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands.
Whose brow, remember?
His brow is wet with honest sweat. He earns whate'er he can and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man.
The blacksmiths, who with the strength of their arms helped gird America, whose labor was so precious they were offered house and lot free to be sure to have them around. Well, according to our indefatigable researchers...
Alas, the village smithy. The last census figure I could find showed only 0.3% of the working population whose brow was still wet with the same honest sweat.
Pretzel twisters, whalers, streetcar conductors, shinglers, wagon and carriage makers, blacksmiths. These are but a few of the Americans whose names are written in disappearing ink on any modern census of American employment. And here are more.
Look, boys, the peddler!
The peddler, with his horse and buggy or carrying his pack on his back, who in many a remote country district provided a gala day for the eager folk as he spread out his notions.
I've got chinware, brassware, watches, clocks, pins, woodenware, baskets, and how does the song hold? Ribbons and laces to set off the faces of pretty young sweethearts and wives.
One you take for this brooch, tain't very good.
Chicken, give me a chicken.
A chicken? Lane sakes alive. Give you a dozen eggs, not a speck more.
Delivered a body blow by the automobile, which carried farm folk to town for their shopping. The peddler is virtually a thing of the past. His echo is only heard today in big cities in the huckster's calls.
Strawberries, hey! Juicy, red, ripe, strawberries, hey! Strawberries, just, I'll cut just, a king.
The traveling tinkers, too, have almost faded. Tinkers, those jacks of all trade whose name came to stand for improvised mending or patching. Only a diehard few left. A few like this man.
I sort of rode without no particular plan, putting to rights any kitchen thing and such made of metal. I carry me a stove, solder, soldering irons, metal scraps, and all sorts of odd and ends. Once upon a time, was hardly a homestead wouldn't welcome a tinker. Used to sup and sleep us, too. And we'd do our work before the fire, passing the time of day with the gossiping we picked up along the way.
But today, old-timer?
Things have changed, son. Nowadays, pots and pans are so cheap, people just pitch them out when they warrant repairing. And it looks like we're a-fouling them to the junk heap.
Shh! sheriffs, believe it or not, while not yet on the decline, appear destined to a glummer future. The time may come when we'll only see the sheriff in the movies, pulling up his posse to shout,
"Whoa! Which way did they go?"
"They went that way, Sheriff."
"Come on, men. We'll head them off at Eagle Creek."
Yes, all because cities are growing in size and taxable wealth, with the tendency to strengthen the city police force at the expense of the county sheriff's office. And because township duties are being lessened, another integral feature of American life.
I pronounce you man and wife. That'll be $2, please.
The justice of peace is on the decline. But saddest to many is the indisputable fact that the small-town newspaper editor with his Country Weekly is showing signs of being pushed out of the national picture.
Hello, Weekly Globe.
Hello, this is Mrs. Peaberry.
Oh, yes, Miss Peaberry.
I have a little story for you.
Oh, fine, Miss Peaberry. Glad to print it.
In 1,001 ways, the country newspaper has been a rock of the nation, giving us men like the late William Allen White of Emporia, Kansas, keeping the community up not only on Mrs. Peaberry, but on the nation and the world.
3 years ago, we opened our columns to a committee of mothers who wanted a place for their kids to play. Today, we've got a swimming pool and a wading pool in a place which used to be just a dusty hole in the town square. Right now, I'm working on an editorial campaign to help young veterans and their families.
Today, many such small-town dailies and weeklies are passing. And while our reading population has trebled in 60 years, the number of country newspapers has been cut in half. Small wonder that thoughtful men are disturbed. Men like Alban Barkley, who, as senator in 1948, declared,
"It is essential that the small newspaper shall be preserved as a part of our educational heritage."
And there you have it, America, a bird's eye view of some vanishing Americans, some whose passing we view with varying degrees of regret. Now, please don't get the idea that what we mean to imply today is that all of the older trades and occupations will be extinct come sundown. Indeed, some of these workers will hold their own. Others possess a skill which is easily transferred. As a matter of fact, some seem immune to time. For example,
I'm a truant officer. There'll always be somebody playing hooky.
As I regard our steadily increasing national budget, I'm certain that I have nothing to fear. Oh, I'll be around for a long time. Oh, yes, you see, I'm an income tax collector.
But more than anything, we can take heart from the startling comeback made by some professions once relegated by wiseacres to the scrap heap, their doom apparently established beyond the shadow of a shadow of doubt. We give you...
I make corsets. Everybody used to laugh at me and said I belonged in a bygone age. But I got the last laugh. Today, corset covers are coming back.
But especially do we give you, in person, yes, the incomparable Swiss bell ringer, Billy Hess.
How do you do, Mr. Grau?
Fine, Billy. How are you doing?
Well, for 76 years, I'd say I'm doing all right.
I'd say you are. Tell us all about it, Billy.
30 years ago, I was a star in vaudeville. Mm-hmm. Then came the movies and radio, and people said vaudeville is dead. They said that at the end of Billy Hess and his bell.
Yeah, well, what did you do then, Billy?
I kept right on playing until I came to one of the few Swiss bell ringers now left.
You're one of the few left. How long have you been making those bells talk music, Billy? How long?
I rung out the old and rung in the new for 50 or 60 years now.
And now what's happened?
Then came television.
Ah, and?
Back came the old artists they said were dead. Back came vaudeville. And everybody wanted to see Billy Hess and his bells again.
Proof enough, America, that you never can tell. And now on 18 bells that differ in size, some large, some small, to vary the tone, one of the last of those who knew the old art of manipulating the bells to get melody in clear, true tones, 76-year-old Billy Hess sounds the revival of vaudeville as well as his own rebirth by ringing the bells of St. Mary. Thank you. so America, with the music, one of the last of the Swiss bell ringers sounding in our ears, we close our report on our vanishing Americans, caught in this brief span of moments on the road to possible obscurity. In so doing, we've helped reveal the changing face of America, not as a sign of our age, but as a sign of our youth. For the aged change, rarely. Youth, however, is bold and daring. And what we've shown you today is testament, for which we should ever be grateful, that we are still a young, vigorous, and growing nation, ready always to challenge the past with the present and the future.
You've been listening to The Vanishing Americans, another program in the series This is the Story, brought to you through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Your narrator was Ben Brower. Lou Hazen wrote the script. Music was composed and directed by Roy Shield. To Wade Arnold and his staff for assistance in research for this program, our genuine thanks. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.